You have quite an Instagram following. How many followers on Instagram do you have right now?
I have 1.7 million.
And who are the most famous that you've noticed?
Drake, Chris Brown, Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott.
Do your teammates give you a hard time about it?
All the time.
That was an interview with Zion Williamson before he even played his first college game at Duke. Zion's otherworldly dunks as a high schooler made him Instagram's first high school basketball superstar. And now teenagers everywhere are trying to follow in his very large footsteps. But are viral highlights and follower counts a reliable measure of talent? And are there hidden costs for kids who blow up on the biggest social media platforms in the world? Today we explore the Instagramification of high school basketball. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, August 25th. This is ESPN Daily. June Lee, the first question I have for you is the most important one. How old are you now?
I'm 25 years old.
Good God. June Lee is a noted member of Gen Z and a talented staff writer for ESPN. He recently wrote about the impact of social media on high school basketball stars. June, I was once like you. I was once an up-and-comer in sports media, but now I stumble across like a 7-year-old YouTuber with millions of subscribers making NBA max contract money for unboxing toys, and I feel the need to enlist a special ESPN Daily youth correspondent like yourself. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you. And if it makes you feel a little bit older too, I used to watch you in high school on television. My parents would be like, oh, that's the Asian dude on ESPN. So
that does not help things. June, back in my day, for a high school basketball player, getting press coverage was a big deal. Being in the paper or a magazine, that was a highlight. But you have now reported about how, unsurprisingly, times have very radically changed. And there was one story in particular in your piece that struck me, and that's the story of Namari Burnett. Tell us what happened to Burnett in this high school basketball game in 2019.
So Namari Burnett plays for Prolific Prep, which is a school out in Napa Valley. They've got a really good basketball program. They took a trip to Geneva, Ohio, which is where LaMelo Ball was playing at Spire Institute before he headed over to Australia. Spire was kind of streaming all of their high school games on Facebook, and there were kind of this internet sensation because of all of the online clout that LaMelo from the reality show to just being a member of the Ball family brings. And so Namari dropped 34 points against Spire Institute. And he cruised to this surprise 35-point blowout win against them. And after the game, Namari is just on his phone, and his phone is completely blowing up. He turns to his teammates in the locker room, and they're asking him, how are you smiling for this long? And he just turns to them and he goes, I don't know, bro. I'm just looking at my phone, and it's just going up and up and up. What he's referring to is the follower count that he was getting on Instagram. Over the course of the next couple of days, he gets over 15,000 new followers, and he gets a blue check mark from Instagram, which is kind of this massive status symbol within the high school basketball community. And it kind of helped him gain this level of notoriety and celebrity that he didn't have before.
You call this craze the Instagramification of high school hoops, and this speaks to not just the popularity of this particular platform, but also, as you indicate, the economy that's now consumed it. Tell me about the profit that Namari Burnett is accumulating here. What is the significance of an increase in Instagram followers for a player like Burnett?
I think it all factors into just kind of the business of basketball at this point, which is it kind of makes kids more marketable. And even at the NBA level, you have players like Kyle Kuzma, who within his own right is a very, very good basketball player. But his level of fame kind of exceeds his basketball ability on the court. And part of that is just kind of exacerbated by the fact that he's this massive Instagram celebrity who posts, you know, interesting outfits on Instagram. He kind of has a personality on there. It's kind of brandished this celebrity image where there's kind of a gap between how famous someone is and how good they are on the basketball court. And those two things often aren't correlated anymore. Once you hit kind of a certain threshold of basketball competence, once you have a couple of viral highlights go around, especially on the high school scene, your level of fame can kind of skyrocket, and it can often become disconnected from how good you actually are as a basketball player.
The idea, the mere idea of all of these young kids across America striving to be Kyle Kuzma in specific is hilarious and honestly kind of terrifying to me because of the influencer economy that you mentioned there, June. So in terms of what whets the appetite of that economy, describe the platonic ideal of what an Instagram basketball highlight is for me. What happens? What do you see? What are these kids all striving for?
So it can be a variety of things, and it can stem from just the way the player looks on the court. Like, a lot of these players have like signature hairstyles, but it can also stem to just the type of play on the court. And so when you go to a high school game now, especially a high profile high school game, you'll see kind of kids attempting dunk contest style dunks in the middle of a regulation high school basketball game. So you'll see guys trying to pull off 360s, then throw down slams and behind the backs. And then you'll also see kids trying too hard to cross someone over on the other side of the court as well.
Hesitation. Hey! Hey! Hey!
And so you'll just generally see this flair that you wouldn't normally see in a high school game maybe 10, 15 years ago, but you're seeing it on every single play. And it's not even just the star players. It's everyone up and down the roster. You'll see kids who are in the middle of the roster who were just trying to get a college scholarship, just trying to get some attention from college coaches through gaining Instagram followers and having a highlight go viral and just trying to get any sort of attention for themselves.
So Zion Williamson, of course, has been a poster child for having a massive Instagram following before even getting to Duke. But in terms of those lesser known characters who've emerged in this world, Mac McClung seems to be a pretty good example. Do you have your cell phone with you, June?
I do.
Would you mind pulling up a highlight of Mac McClung and telling me what you see?
So I've got a Mac McClung highlight up in front of me right now. This is a clip from February 2017. It's got over 2 million views on Instagram. It's literally just an iPhone slow motion video of him going up for a dunk in the middle of his high school gym, just hanging around with his friends. He puts the ball behind his back, under his legs, and he slams it home. And Mac McClung is a less than 6 foot tall white dude from a small town in Virginia of around 2,000 people. This was kind of one of the first moments that he had that went viral, and he started bringing those dunks into games. And so he has highlight clips of him doing these similar kind of acrobatic dunks within basketball games.
McClung to the hole! Bam! Who's the Mac?
They have 3 million views, they have more than 2 million views, and it's just kind of consistent. Before Mac was posting these dunks on Instagram, he wasn't getting a ton of college attention from what he told me. But at the end of the day, he started kind of garnering all of his attention from his dunks, and he was able to back it up with his play. He eventually got a scholarship to Georgetown. He played 2 seasons at Georgetown and is now transferring to Texas Tech. He credits the fact that he probably wouldn't have gotten this attention without having posted these dunks that went viral on Ball's Life and Slam and House of Highlights, you know, kind of created this level of internet celebrity that garnered the attention that he was able to back up with his actual play on the court. You know, the thing that really stuck out to me from my conversation with Mac was that, you know, kids can go for the 30-point game or they can get that one viral dunk, and the kids want the dunk now. And I thought that really, really stood out to me.
The dunk presumably gets you what Mac McClung got, which is the holy grail, June. DMs from Drake asking for a Mac McClung jersey.
Yeah, I mean, he told me a story about how Quavo called him up randomly. He looked down at his phone, and it was an Atlanta zip code number. He's a kid from a small town in Virginia. Like, who's calling him from Atlanta? He picked up the phone. It was Quavo from Migos. Like, who could have possibly have imagined that kind of thing happening, like, 10 years ago? A kid from literally a small town getting a call from one of the most famous rappers in the country because of a couple of dunks he posted on Instagram. And you see people like Quavo, you see people like Drake sitting courtside at these high school games now. It's become this center of pop culture to a certain degree.
So, in terms of Instagram itself, it was created in 2012. What about our world and our behavior as consumers left this giant opening for a social media platform like this to become this entire universe where high school basketball players are able to promote themselves as you describe?
Part of it is inherent within Instagram, where I think, you know, Instagram is a place where there's kind of overwhelming positivity and optimism to a certain degree. You only see the kind of the bright spots of people's lives. People don't really post downer stuff. And I think it also kind of fits in with just the highlight culture in general, where I had a high school coach, Anthony Davis, who is not related to the Lakers star, who coaches over at Crossroads High School in Los Angeles. He basically said that highlights aren't representative of real basketball and real life on Instagram. You don't have people miss. You don't have people making mistakes. And even now, the way that the highlight culture has evolved on Instagram, it's become a string of highlights to now just one highlight. You only need one play to go viral now. Even if they went 2 for 12, if they had one shot that went in that was awesome, that's all that really matters to a lot of these kids.
All right, coming up, let's talk about the mental toll the obsession with followers and likes can have on young athletes.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
June, it seems like the buzz being generated online by these players has also translated to huge crowds at the actual high school games themselves. Years ago, that was the province of LeBron and maybe a few other top players who could draw that kind of crowd. But people seem to be attracted by the highlights, the celebrity aspect that we've now chronicled here. You went to a few of these sold-out games back when, you know, games could happen pre-pandemic. What was that experience like?
It's a total circus on so many different levels, because a lot of these kids who are coming to these games have never seen a full basketball game of these high school celebrities actually play out, whether that's on the internet or in person. And so they're coming in with a certain level of expectation for who someone might play like or what that experience might be like. But there's often a gap in those two things. You know, when I went to the Hoop Hall Classic out in Springfield, that event has been going on for nearly 20 years. This was the first year that that event sold out. And I talked to the program organizer, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that these kids are now massive celebrities. You know, before the Sierra Canyon game, before Bronny and BJ Boston and Zaire Williams, you know, two of the top prospects in last year's high school class, were playing, 2.5 hours before the game, there was no sitting room available. And then 1.5 hours before the game, there was no standing room available. It was totally crazy just seeing how long people were willing to wait just to get a glimpse of Sierra Canyon. And I think this also kind of ties into this idea of, you know, how people kind of portray themselves online and kind of the gap in what the reality of how good they are on the basketball court. There's this phenomenon called Instagram anxiety, where a lot of these kids start to feel anxious as a result of how people perceive them because of their online profiles and versus how good they actually are. And, you know, I'm personally concerned just about the future of high school players as we see this attention economy and just the number of celebrities on the high school basketball scene continue to grow, because there's going to be kids who are labeled as busts before they even graduate high school now. And that's a crazy thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, SportsCenter, when it debuted, there was a similar moral panic in the sense that kids would now be chasing highlights because that's what our value system was now prioritizing. But a key difference here, June, seems to be that we're all producing our own version of SportsCenter now.
With SportsCenter, you know, you had the traditional media gate guardians kind of protecting, you know, or they were kind of choosing what went on the television, what was a top 10 play, right? And now it's the algorithms of Instagram and it's the audience of Instagram and the fans of these kids who are choosing what plays go viral. You know, we have games on ESPN where we're streaming Sierra Canyon games, but their fame resulted as a result of a lot of the Instagram highlights and the algorithm and the explore page, all that stuff. A lot of these kids told me throughout the course of reporting the story that they don't necessarily want to chase the highlights, But it's kind of subconscious in the back of their heads because they know what the reward system is. You know, you get an endorphin rush from getting all of these likes on Instagram. You get an endorphin rush from seeing your follower count shoot up and seeing a blue check mark and seeing that kind of validation. And so there's kind of this culture war within the sport right now where coaches want to teach these kids how to play good fundamental basketball. But the reward system for a lot of these kids, whether they realize it or not, are subconsciously chasing the highlights.
One example, June, of this false Instagram reality that has a distortion effect seems to be the story of Seventh Woods. Tell me who that is.
So Seventh Woods went viral on YouTube with a Ball Is Life mixtape about a decade ago now. He was a top recruit and he had all of this hype behind him, and they kind of gained this narrative on YouTube that he was the best 14-year-old basketball player in the country and that he was going to be this potential superstar in the NBA. And then he got to UNC and he totally flamed out after three seasons. He played 94 games, averaged 1.8 points, and then transferred to South Carolina. There's this kind of this distortion as a result of the hype and the attention and stringing together these highlight tapes where people aren't missing and you're just putting together, again, the highlights of someone's play in the court. And you don't see kind of the full picture of how they actually are in the basketball court. You're not seeing highlight tapes of people setting good screens and boxing people out in the paint. That's not a thing that goes viral on Instagram. And so those things aren't rewarded within kind of the system of Instagram and the culture of high school basketball on there.
So you've described two parallel cultures that sometimes intersect. On the one hand, there is this hierarchy based on follower count and buzz on social media. And on the other hand, there is the actual rankings of these players, their actual potential on the court, their talent, what scouting services regard them as. According to the college coaches and recruiters and talent evaluators you spoke to, how often do those two columns diverge from each other?
It's more often than you would think. You know, you see four-star prospects who aren't ranked on ESPN's top 100 with 300,000, 400,000 followers. There's this player, Noah Farrakhan, who played for the Patrick School in New Jersey. He's got over 350,000 followers. He's got all of these mixtapes on Ball Is Life, on Slam, is really, really, really famous on the Instagram basketball scene. And he's playing at East Carolina, which is obviously is a Division I program, but is not level to the amount of followers that he has on Instagram. And that's not a fault to him. You know, he's a very good basketball player compared to the rest of us. I'm sure that he would demolish me in a one-on-one game, but his game isn't necessarily representative of the amount of fame that he has. You know, someone like Evan Mobley is one of the top players in this high school class. He's only got 50,000 followers because he's a 7-footer who plays back to the basket and doesn't put up Instagram highlights. I think that's just a byproduct of what works well on Instagram and what doesn't.
What you're really referring to here is a corruption of this pipeline that runs from the youngest ages through high school basketball, through to college, through ultimately to the NBA. I think of Adam Silver being on stage at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, June, talking about how unhappy NBA players are.
I mean, I think we live a bit in the age of anxiety.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's I've read studies on this. I think part of it is a direct product of social media.
Yes.
And I think those players we're talking about, when I meet with them, what strikes me is that they are truly unhappy.
The dynamic you've described in high school, what does it portend for the NBA, where these players ultimately become adults with bigger audiences and presumably even greater complications?
I talked to Sahara Byrne, who's a professor of communication over at Cornell, and she talked about the fact that on the internet, the most extreme opinions are going to be exacerbated. And if anyone has ever had any haters or trollers in their comment section, you know that the negative stuff tends to stick in your brain more than all the positive stuff. You know, I think this is a thing that a lot of NBA players have to deal with. I talked to Grant Bechard, who has worked with a variety of NBA players on their mental health and kind of staying present in the moment. We're going to have to see people kind of take more care of their mental health and be kind of more aware of the effect of being in the spotlight at a younger age. You know, the crowd for a lot of these high school kids is growing by the thousands, even millions, day by day, year by year. And it's only going to continue growing as, you know, we see even more high school celebrities emerge on the basketball scene. And we see the prep to pro route kind of get validated again, as we expect, you know, the NBA to allow high school kids to come back into the NBA draft process. And we're going to see kids who flame out as a result of that.
as the pipeline to the NBA, as you say, continues to flow and flows faster than ever, maybe, what happens to NBA culture? Because we've seen it accelerate in the last couple of years, but what's the next iteration of this going to look like, given what's preceded it?
I really think it's going to look more like Hollywood. I think it's going to align itself in a similar entertainment industry. I know. I think there's this idea of purity within sports to a certain degree, and especially at the amateur levels. You know, people talk about Little League Baseball, people talk about high school baseball, but I think a lot of that through money and the attention of Instagram and just the chase of fame has been corrupted to a certain degree, where these kids are like Disney Channel stars now, and they care about their image, and they're so much more polished at the high school level. You know, you talk to these high school kids and they talk like adults, and they are self-aware in a way that I wasn't in high school, and I'm only like 6, 7, 8 years older than some of them. I'm not entirely removed from their generation, but they've grown up in a completely different world where their entire lives are broadcast on the internet, and they have to be so much more self-aware of what people think of them. And that's kind of a double-edged sword to a certain degree. I think we're going to see more kids who are exponentially famous and maybe don't make it to the NBA. I think you're going to start seeing kids who are not necessarily the best basketball players, but are making money playing basketball. And I think you're just going to see kind of all of this stuff get more and more monetized, just basically capitalism seeping in to high school basketball and kind of ingraining itself in every single aspect of the sport.
So, June, I brought you here as ESPN's youth sports correspondent. But as I listen to you, I'm beginning to sense some of the existentialism that I battle. Are you feeling older having reported this story?
Oh, 100%. It was definitely interesting to like go in and talk to a lot of these high school kids and realize, even just talking to my little sister, who's 8 years younger than me, and realizing that I don't feel that much older than them, but they live in this completely different world. The goal of all these social media sites is to maximize the attention that they can capture from their audiences and keep you clicking on the next video and the next video. This makes me sound like, I guess, like an old boomer to a certain degree, but like... I do worry about how the reality of people are going to be different. You're kind of in this echo chamber to a certain degree that's created by your own preferences and biases and your worldview. How does that shape the world if everyone is living in their own customized, personalized world?
Well, June, at the very least, I hope you tell your sister that she's never too young to subscribe to ESPN Daily.
Of course, Pablo.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on, Pablo.
Coming up, why an admission of error in the NFL's COVID testing actually felt like some of the most refreshing news yet.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely. Drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. When the NFL got word over the weekend that 77 COVID tests had come back positive, the 11 teams affected began various evasive maneuvers. The Vikings quarantined their dozen people who tested positive. The Jets shut their whole facility down due to their 10 cases, and the Bills held quarterback Josh Allen out of practice entirely. But yesterday, the league announced that its first widespread coronavirus scare was precisely and miraculously just that, a scare, a false alarm for their many pages of pandemic protocols. Because every single one of those 77 people who'd apparently tested positive were quickly retested. And this time, every single one came back negative. It turns out that all 77 results in question had initially been processed at the very same lab in New Jersey, run by BioReference Laboratories, the NFL's testing partner. BioReference now says that those 77 results were most likely false positives due to what it calls an isolated contamination during test preparation, which is an admission of error that kind of sounds like it was pulled straight from a sequel to Jurassic Park. But make no mistake here, that is an admission of error. And as terrifying as this whole episode was for everybody, the takeaway here isn't that testing is a scam, or that COVID is a scam, or that science is a scam. At this point, actually, my takeaway is just the opposite. I found myself astounded that a modern institution could revisit its past actions, very publicly own its missteps, and given that this all took about a day to resolve, look shockingly unconcerned with taking an L in our larger culture war because it was admitting its mistakes. But that would be the upside of science. That would be the sort of self-reckoning we don't get very often in this country. Not anymore. Not at any level. But after 6 whole months of flailing against this pandemic, it would really help if we did. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.